counties, it mentioned in the statement that he read about the county's involvement in the...
We're back from recess.
Proceedings. What their involvement were, what our obligations are.
One of the principal questions that Dan asked when we had the meeting the other day is what other also financial obligations might we be looking at that fall within what we were getting ready to sign that the county was not aware of?
Really, the county, and I've got Mr. Davis with me, Mickey Davis, and he's our consultant, so correct me if I misspeak on anything. But the county really won't have any financial obligations with this program. It's a program where FEMA will pay for the full 75%, and then the CDBG grant is to pay the other 25%. I know one of the concerns that had come up last week as well was a concern about the value of these homes, and I had a little bit more time to kind of think about this. In all honesty, when we applied for this grant,
Okay. A little more specific is that there is an amount that we are to receive potentially.
Yes.
And in our discussions, it was discovered that yet there's going to be another appraisal. And that appraisal, what would happen if it came back and the homes are worth more than what the amount was that was approved, if you will? Yeah, so go ahead.
Probably the best way for me to answer this, I've provided a sheet here for you gentlemen, and this was actually submitted to FEMA initially. It's And initially, we had 10 properties involved in the flood buyout total. Number 8 has dropped out, though. Since this initially started, number 8 has dropped out. And so that leaves a total of 9 properties. Taney County was very fortunate in that of these 9 properties, 8 of these actually had flood insurance. When you go over to this line item, that says DOB, that actually stands for what FEMA refers to as duplication of benefits. And so that is actual insurance monies that each of these property owners have received. They've actually given us receipts. And so and this has been revised somewhat since we had the one property owner that dropped out. The total grant amount or the total amount for these properties would now be $3,594,000. And so that's what we actually applied for via these two grant applications.
Give me that number again.
$3,594,000. But of that amount, these property owners have already received over $1.3 million in insurance payments. And so essentially this is a program where they can't receive those payments again. So we applied for $3.5 million, but they've already received $1.3 million in insurance payments. And so even though we're applying for the full market value of these houses, they won't actually receive that entire value, if that makes sense.
So it would go from the 3.5 down to about 2.2. Our primary question is, we're going to have appraisals after we sign the documents.
Yes.
What if those appraisals come back and it's twice as much money as what we have here? Not that that's likely, but...
Yeah, two things. One, this is a voluntary program, both sides. Both seller and the county, all the way up to closing. So the appraisal process probably take about 45 days, you know, to get somebody selected and get them done. So in 45 days, I had the nine appraisals, and we compare them to these values. If they're more, then that seems first approach would be, hey, you got enough cash because the grant's been approved for $3,594,000, and this amount of insurance gets deducted on the closing statement. So the cash is still there from FEMA. We don't write a check to FEMA. SEMA don't write a check to FEMA. In essence, when this grant gets done, you won't use up anywhere close to the amount that's been approved. So that's one area to get it. The second area is they won't look at each one, so it'll be a cumulative. So if one's low, one's high, as long as the total amount wouldn't exceed the $3,594,000 at the end of the appraisals, okay there. Let's just take the worst case that you'd be feared of, that it comes out at, you know, another $500,000. We haven't done a contract with them. Well, we talked to SEMA, and SEMA has already told Bob, and they can tell you, that they have extra money. So before we did a contract and before SEMA would approve us doing the contract, even though we did the appraisal, no commitment because we haven't agreed to sell it, we've just agreed to get it appraised, then we would, if it was way higher, we'd make sure that SEMA has the money and they would amend the contract, the grant. If they didn't, then we wouldn't have the money to do it. My feeling is, as much research as we did on these, that the appraisal will probably be difficult to reach these amounts. But it's a fee appraisal and it's independent, and as we all know, we can't make that statement today. So I think you're well protected, but I want you to feel comfortable and make sure you answer it. Because when I originally took this, and I make this commitment again today, we're not doing this project, and we've told all the property owners, cannot cost the taxpayers one dime. So as we go through on everything, we'll be able to say, okay, appraisals cost $4,500. We're getting reimbursed this and this, and that equals $4,500. When we do the contracts, we will get the money in. The other thing is, we're getting, on the appraisals, we were planning on putting net 30 in the contract. So when they get through with the appraisal, they give us a bill. SEMA and CDBG have agreed that electronically they will kick the money. So we'll wait till the money gets in the account and then pay it out to make it a clean transaction. So before we close on property, SEMA will send the money to the county, and then the county will write the check to the title company. We're going to make it, and we've talked to SEMA and CDBG, not using county funds and then getting reimbursed, but wait till the funds are been forward. Hopefully that clears up a few questions.
My question was, there were several phases to this. You've explained both these rather well, but there is a demolition cost. The property will end up in the county's hands as a green space. If there is a possibility of asbestos removal in the demolition process, all the things that have to go through, who bears that cost?
All of those are included in the grant.
They're included in the grant.
Asbestos inspection, removal if necessary, demolition, taking it down to grade, and seeding it. So when the property's done, we can put, I guess what I'm saying, we can put in the demolition contract that they grade it and seed it.
Okay. And then the planning and zoning administrator mows it.
Now that is,
as long as it's none of us four, I guess I agree with that.
No, that is, and that is the thing I was going to bring up, is long term, the properties would have to be maintained by the county as park space or open space, basically. But there's not going to be any cost to the county as far as the rest of the program, as far as acquiring the properties, demolishing the houses, seeking the appraisals. there won't be any other cost to the county, basically. The county acts more as a pass-through for these funds, essentially, because these individuals can't apply to FEMA directly. They have to apply via the county.
There's a responsibility for us to keep those locations clean, or do they just grow up, or is that a question that we...
They will fall to the county's responsibility, is my understanding.
The county 100%. Has to sign off, and that you are agreeing that once the properties are obtained, demoed, that you will maintain them. Your option, the option you have is you could also consider if a neighbor says, you know, I'd like to maintain that, then you could, Bob could put together a lease that needs to get approved, but they get approved. We've got them approved before, where you would lease it to the neighbor for a dollar with the stipulation they can't build, they can't do anything you talked about, but they could use it, mow it, you know, you can do anything but just can't build on it. So if they wanted to put a picnic table over there. So some jurisdictions that we've worked with have went through that process. Some have built soccer fields, but others have leased it out to a neighbor if they want to. But the responsibility, Presiding Commission 100% right, the responsibility is the county, but you can delegate that through a lease as long as you get the lease terminology approved through SEMA to a neighbor, or to somebody to maintain it as long as they're not constructing on it.
And that falls back to, I think, what your original question was and mine last week was, hey, sign this, and then we'll tell you what your responsibilities are and what stipulations are. Before I sign anything, I want to know what the stipulations and responsibilities are. Is that not what you're feeling the same, Danny?
Did you give them a copy of the restriction that gets filed with the deed?
I haven't yet, but
you
I
one,
can.
Because I didn't bring mine with me. There's a restriction.
Right, and the verbiage, when we read it, the verbiage, it was specifically said, pretty much after you sign it, then a representative will come down and tell you what your responsibilities are.
And what we had.
And that's what I think Danny's problem was, is what's the stipulations and responsibilities before we sign it.
And what we had read was the letter from CDBG where James Repinette had indicated that he'd be contacting us soon to arrange a meeting to discuss the procedures and requirements of the program.
And that's kind of what they went over. Yeah, they had a work session about, 2 hours, 3 hours with Bob to kind of go over the technicalities. But in general, the responsibility, the restriction that gets placed on the FEMA side. CDBG side is more the technical carrying out what you have to carry out the grant. The restriction gets applied on the FEMA side. There'll be a deed restriction that will get attached to every warranty deed. So maybe
basically that deed restriction essentially, like he was saying, it doesn't allow for the construction of any structures, anything FEMA would consider a structure. So a building basically couldn't be built back on these properties.
Well, there could be an open air facility. It doesn't have a roof. I mean, if I read the restrictions properly.
Let's say for some reason you had a big enough lot and you could build like a shelter. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these projects you get cumulative lots. That's not the case here, but some of these lots are very big. But yeah, if the county wanted to take responsibility and build a shelter, or the neighbor says, comes to you and says, hey, could we use that? And you wanted to work out an agreement. They just can't do anything anything different than what you guys could do. So they could put an open shelter.
But these are, let's face it, they're choice lots.
Yes.
On the water. And if there were picnic tables, or if there was something that the county wanted to do through the park system, there are guidelines that would direct us in the way that we could utilize that, or
exactly.
The community could utilize it.
And you do not have to make those decisions today
right.
of how you want to use it. You can when you get them accumulatively?
FEMA's primary concern is that no new buildings would be built on it, because they define a structure as having four walls and a roof. So you're exactly correct. If it's something that is open air, then they don't look at it as a structure, basically.
Yeah, it says in here that you can build restrooms and.
But it says you can't have any paved surfaces.
That's the minor things. My main thing was the demolition and asbestos removal and things like that. There's several things that we can do as a county from this written document that you have here. As I said before, I was wondering who was going to bear the cost of all of the demo work and all that. So that's where.
Yeah.
I guess I come to a screeching halt last week until we visited with these people on it. But
given that, and given the answers that we received from Mr. Davis, do you think this is necessary for us to contact SEMA and the CDBG representatives?
I think it is, that now that we've asked them and they're sitting there in the office waiting on us to call.
Well, that's what I was wondering as well.
We've answered our question.
And that will allow you to reassure what I said, but ask them just that about the demo and they'll be able to inform you.
All right.
Let's see. Who needs to?
We're going to dial them up right here. We've got it.
We're in the middle of the hearing. Let me call you back.
Get that number.
I got it right
here. Please enter your account code.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Can you hear that? Sheila, this is Ron Houseman in Taney County. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're doing well. I'm sitting here and we are live. We're broadcasting live. We're in the middle of a county commission meeting.
Okay.
We're with Mr. Davis, Bob Batchley, the three commissioners, and the public.
Okay. Let me put you on speakerphone. I have with me James Robnett from the Community Development Block Grant Program and also Mike Williams, who is the assigned contract mitigation consultant here with SEMA. And so let me put you on speakerphone. Hang on just a sec.
Thank you.
Are you still there?
We're still here. Can you hear us?
Yes, just fine.
Let me turn your Can you say that again for me?
Yeah, we're here. Do you want me to list the names of the people that are here again? Or?
Yes. No, as I understand it, it's yourself, Sheila Huddleston, James Robinette, and Mike Williams?
Yes, that's correct.
And again, you have the three commissioners here, Mickey Davis and Bob Ashley, as well as we're live in a county commission meeting.
Okay.
And we are here today because we had some questions regarding the next step that the county commission should take in the process of securing funds in the buyout program for those people who had flood damage on Taney Como during the April floods from a couple of years ago. Was that 2 years ago, Bob?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to let Commissioner Strahan ask the first question or two.
Yeah. This is Danny Strahan, and I was concerned about who was responsible for the demolition cost and any hazardous waste cleanup that might occur on these properties. And I've been given direction from Mr. Davis that he thinks that is included, and the county doesn't have any responsibility, and I was just wanting to make sure of that.
Well, the cost of the demolition is part of the grant that has been approved by FEMA as far as the demolition of structures that are on the properties that end up participating in the buyout project. That includes asbestos identification and asbestos abatement. When you talk about hazardous materials, though, if some reason you have a demolition contract comes out and one of the properties, and you end up finding, say, an old say that there used to be a gas station on the property, and there's you find a gas barrel of some kind that no one knew was there. That actually has happened one time before on another project. It was so long ago that the property was a gas station that nobody even knew that there was a possibility of that there. They went back and did some digging in the title and found out, yes, indeed, it used to be a gas station. Stuff like that, in that particular case, it had not contaminated anything. It was, and so there was not an issue there. But if you find some kind of hazardous material on the property during demolition, other than like asbestos, then that's the that would be the responsibility of the county. The grant would not be able to pay for that unless it was actually in the structures themselves. I think some of the properties that we're talking about are relatively new in comparison. Am I correct in that, Bob?
Yes.
The houses that we're looking at for your project were built after 2000. They've been there since, they're not 50, 60, 70-year-old properties.
Exactly. Most of these houses were built in the 1990s or so.
Okay.
And they're, of course, right on the lake. I mean, I don't think there's any chance. I mean, I guess you don't know for sure, but I'm really doubtful that there was ever a gas station or any industries.
Not unless the Indians that lived there prior.
Exactly, but you don't know. But, I mean, it's highly unlikely. I mean.
No, we're confident of that. That was vacant land until these homes were built.
Okay.
Dan, other questions?
No, that's what I was. My concern was I didn't want the county to dive into something.
You also had a question about once we entered into these agreements, what other responsibilities we might have if they really come down and. No.
Right. That was written in the paperwork that we had last week that. After we signed that you were going to come down and tell the county what their responsibilities were, and that was kind of a holdup for a couple of the commissioners to agree on, was the fact that we didn't know what you were going to come down and tell us after the fact that we had signed off on a document.
In the past, we've done public meetings at the request of the subgrantee at the time that the grant was awarded. But we did that in combination with City of Branson last year, I believe it was. But if you guys want us to come do it again, I can do that. We just need to work out some kind of schedule on that. I talked to Bob previously about that. Usually that it's a public meeting, but people that are usually interested in it are the property owners only. Yes, and Bob, I'm not real sure if you thought that there would be any interest for the property owners since they did set through that. I think we spent a couple of hours talking about it when we did with Branson, and I went through all the steps. So there's not really anything to add to that. There really hasn't been anything to change significantly that will impact your project. But, I mean, even if the commission just wants me to come down and talk to you face-to-face, on what will be what I went through with Bob and Mickey when they came for the grant orientation. Talk about the fact that we'll do a grant orientation with you guys
In the past, we have spent a lot of time going to the locations where the streams are, but in the last year or so, because of the disaster that we had that included the Joplin tornado was so big, and the fact that we're getting multiple projects approved, same types of projects approved, we've had some grantees jurisdictions with approved projects actually come to us, so that we can have multiple sub-grantees come and go through the same stuff at the same time, so that we didn't have to do multiple presentations for the grant orientation. So that's what the documentation refers to, but if the commission wants to, again, if the commission wants me to come down, I can do that.
Sheila,
James, the CDBG Community Development Block Grant would do the same thing.
Sheila, this is Mickey Davis. Me and Bob have been treating the boat docks as personal property,
Hold on just a second.
Okay.
I don't have a microphone. She can't hear you out there. It's not connected to this. That microphone doesn't carry to her. This is the phone. I don't think I can get it.
My question, this is Commissioner Williams. My question would be, the docks that are involved, because that's personal property, correct? Is there a time frame that we give them in order to move those?
All personal property has to be removed from the buyout property at the closing date. So if the boat docks are considered personal property, the date of closing would be the deadline for them, and that's something that the county would work out. Once we get to that the process, the county would have to work out that particular closing date with each individual property owner, the title company to determine the closing date.
And then with the usage
has to be removed when they sign the deed over to the county, because once the deed is signed over to the county, if anything that's left becomes public property and has to be disposed of in a public manner.
If it is a dock, and I'm just looking at what is the definition of open space, could it be a could you have, fishing docks? Those turned into fishing docks or something. Is that something that's able to be...
liability for that?
What's that?
Does the county want to take the liability for owning, because those would become county property?
Right. My question is would that be qualified under your open space deed restriction?
It depends. You would have to put it in writing, and we would have to get a concurrence from FEMA, but for open space, it can be wetlands, open space or recreational usage, and if you turn it into fishing dock, maybe. I hate to say one way or the other without actually involving FEMA. I think it probably would, based on my experience in talking to FEMA about eligible uses of open space property, but you wouldn't be able to, put a paved parking lot or any kind of paved roadway or anything like that to those docks.
Now, my guess is that every individual that has a dock knows that there's a value in that dock, and they're
going
to want to do something with it. The expense of moving it might be more.
We've explained to each owner over a year ago about the docks, and also informed them that they need to remove the docks prior to closing. One has sold it, and the other one is pending some kind of action. So they have been aware of that.
Sheila, this is Danny Strahan again. I was at the Branson meeting where you went through the public statements that you made on the the city. So I didn't know whether that was the same thing that you were going to do here, but that you did that before their signature. So I didn't. I mean, I was there for all the statements that you made. So.
The only additional thing that we talked to Mickey and Bob about when they came for the grant orientation was the specific administrative stuff involved with as far as what the next steps are for the county as far as paperwork goes and how to request the funding to fill out the request for funds and things like that. It was really just the administrative stuff that we went over, which also essentially included everything that I did go through in that public meeting.
Any other questions, gentlemen?
No.
Sheila, I think that given the questions that we had of Mickey and Bob and then the answers that you've given us, answer all the questions that we had.
Okay.
And I don't even think that there would be need of a further step or an additional public hearing, at least from my perspective. I'm well satisfied. I think we'll be well on our way once we approve what Bob has for us to sign and we move forward.
Okay. And if any of you ever have any questions, feel free to give me a call or you can go through Bob, which you would rather do. I will do my best to answer any questions you guys have. And if you do come up with ideas of what you might want to do with some of the buyout properties, you can call me and ask me about them, but if you really want to get serious about them, we ask that you put it in writing.
And we will do that. We haven't had any formal discussions about that, so but we appreciate that very much.
Well, you're welcome.
And thank each of the other gentlemen for me for being present for this.
You're welcome.
Bob, Mickey, any questions or comments or...
I don't think there are any other things that I really have at this point.
Sheila, thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bob, do you have everything that we need to move forward, or shall we schedule that for next Monday?
At this point, the only other thing we really require at this point is it calls for the signature of the presiding commissioner for both the hazard mitigation grant and also the CDBG grant.
If I'm not mistaken, last week, did we not receive commission approval for the presiding commissioner to act on behalf of the commission when that time came?
Yes.
What we'd like to do, though, is to approve the signing of those very documents, and then I would do that. Would you?
Okay.
You have those with you?
Yes. And I kept them separate. There are two copies of the CEMA grant, of the hazard mitigation grant, and then there's a total of three copies of the CDBG grant. Each grant is they're separate programs, and so they want us to handle these a little differently. The CEMA grant, they want us to sign two copies and send them one and retain one for our records. The CDBG grant, they've asked that we send all three in, and then they'll send us back two copies for our records. I don't know why things are done a little differently, but it's just two separate programs, basically.
We'll do this in two separate motions because they are two separate motion to approve the agreement between Taney County and CEMA, the Missouri State Emergency Management Agency, for the buyout program.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded to approve an agreement by and between the County of Taney and the Missouri State Emergency Management Agency through the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. Buyout funding approval form is included. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries.
And the second motion is between the Taney County and the CDBG grant for approval of the funding.
Is that a motion?
Yep.
Second.
It's a block grant.
Motion's been made and seconded to approve the agreement by and between the County of Taney and Missouri Department of Economic Development Community Development Block Grant Program, CDBG, as presented. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries.
So it's my understanding this allows you to start your appraisal process.
Exactly. We're going to try to move forward on that as quickly as possible.
I'm going to be working. I'm putting together the documents and we're going to work with Mr. Erickson to select the appraiser. So we'll start on that process. We met with the homeowners about a week ago and explained, get this signed and kind of where we're going forward. So, and then Bob will be doing monthly updates, so Bob can just forward those to you guys as commissioner, so you'll know in case you get questions on where we're at on the process. We do have to do an environmental study for CDBG, and that's going to take about 60 days. They won't use FEMA's, just typical government, but we have to do a separate one that's a little different. Outcome will come out, have always come out the same, but we've got a lot more paperwork and a few more public hearings, but that's just, FEMA requires you to do an environmental audit before you get your grant approved. CDBG requires you to do it after you
get the approval.
Get the approval, so that they, because they can't pay you for doing it or do anything until after they get an approval, so. But we'll kind of outline that and send it to you so you'll know in case somebody asks where we're at on the process, you'll be able to inform.
Anything else, Bob?
Not that I can think of at this point, unless there are other questions.
Danny, Brandon, anything else?
I do have one question. When this proceeds to the point of us taking it over, we need to, it's a legal question, I guess, but it will pertain to this, put signage up until we decide what we're going to do with the property as being open green space owned by the county for liability purposes.
I don't know the answer.
Neither the CDBG or FEMA requires that. That'll be stuff you need to talk internally if you want to post something so people that see it's vacant know, you know, whether you want to post a nice little sign and say it's open space so you're not getting calls all the time for people wanting to buy it to build a house. That might be something you want to do, but from the FEMA requirement, the only FEMA requirement is it'll be attached to the warranty deed. So if anybody would bypass you and want to go to the title company and get a copy of that deed, they're going to see those restrictions that you're obligated to. But those are good questions you're going to need to look at to kind of protect your liability issues if somebody goes on and trips or.
All right, we're going to need some guidance from council. We're also going to have to talk to our insurance company, and there's a number of things that we're going to have to be involved in. And all of those properties, with the exception of one, mm-hmm. are together, and the others set aside around a little inlet?
There is one that's separate that's off of Lakeshore, I believe.
Lakeshore Drive.
Yeah, but all of the others are somewhat clustered. We've got... there are a few remaining houses, in all honesty, that weren't substantially damaged, but most of these are fairly clustered.
Seeing nothing further, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And again, thank you for your perseverance. I know this has been a long, long process. And I applaud you for doing what we told you early on, and that was to make sure that it's not the county that was dragging its feet, that it would be a federal agency rather than this county, and I appreciate all your involvement, Bob, in this. Would you make sure that we get copies of this upstairs? Not just later when all copies have been signed, but as soon as possible.
Yes. In fact, I'll go directly to the house, so just to be sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again. Thank you so much.
Our next session has been labeled 2013 Technology Fund. Is the meeting by and between individuals representing CenturyTel. Would you all like to come up and join us?
How's everybody today?
Good, and how are you?
Pretty good, sir.
We're glad winter's almost over. We really haven't had any.
Yeah.
Been good.
Been good.
How are you all today?
We're good. Thank you for having us.
We are scheduled to meet with you all, to hear from you all, if in fact we want to talk contracts and we want to go into executive session, we also have the ability to do that. We are posted. I know this has been a long time coming. I hope you're okay.
Better.
We wish you
well. I apologize for the slippers, but that was a tumble. I feel like Gumby.
Are you okay? That's the question.
I will be.
You will be. Okay.
After 50, if you hurt yourself, you're in the long haul.
Well, what have you got, like 15 years till you get there?
I do. People have told me.
Well played.
Thank you.
Would we like to begin? You all can certainly initiate the conversation, and then we'll go from there.
Last time we talked, we took care of some maintenance on the PBX system for your voice calls connecting to the 911 with the maintenance agreement for the 911 equipment portion. And then there were some further discussions that breached out into the area of the existing contracts that had expired for local service, long-distance service, the internet services, and the connectivity between locations. Those contracts are still sitting in that month-to-month basis, ready to be renewed. We were under the understanding that the county was going to put together an RFP so that those services could be rebid at what would then be current prices, and if there are other vendors in the community that wanted to come forward and bid those things, that it would be that open bidding process to go through. A second part of that discussion that we're really interested in having with the commission is that overall technology plan in 2013. With Mr. Williams on board, new commission assembled, where do you see the county actually growing? What areas need to be addressed? As far as what's existing, are there any changes that need to be made to better serve the citizens of our county? Are there things that need to be rearranged? Is everything up to par with these systems? Are the software upgrades in place, those things? There was talk of disaster recovery, business continuity, off-site storage, what would be some options, what are we going to consider as the criteria on a go-forward basis to incorporate those things into the county's plan. So those were some of the things that were left on the table. And I understand Mark's been working on some of those things as your IT manager, and look forward to hearing more about that direction for the county and if there's areas that we can help you grow those plans.
Danny, do you or Brandon have any comments before I call on Mark?
No.
We have met a couple of times with Mark, with staff, about where we are. Much of the discussions that were brought to bear were driven by Jim, Mr. Straffes, to reach the point where we were at the end of the year, where we're at now, between he and his discussions with Mark. Mark has since that time come back with some of the information that was requested. And I'd like Mark, if you will, to tell us where we're at, what you've provided us. And this commission has made no decisions, has had no formal discussions about what we are going to do or intend to do. We were trying to bring as much information to bear as would be possible with Brandon on board and to bring us up to snuff, because we were less informed, I should say, than the one that was driving the issue. But with that said, we'll ask Mark, and again, we're looking into everything in open mind and with hopes of coming to a conclusion soon as to what the commission will be doing and the direction we'll be taking. That was pretty windy, wasn't it, Mark?
It covers it. All right. Well, I've put together some diagrams that kind of show what we have right now. Also, probably the direction I think we'd like to go. I'm always up for suggestions. I'm here, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you. You guys have already seen these before.
But you got another copy I could have?
Bring out some new copies for you. Just so.
Mark, what we're looking at has different costs on it, et cetera. Is this something that we would be better served chatting about in closed session?
Yeah, I'll leave that up to you.
Well, I'm asking because if we go out to a bidding process, we want...
Oh, we just don't bring up specific numbers. Yeah. We have
it'd be hard.
I think at this point, just if we discuss on what products are in place,
go ahead.
We could move to.
Go ahead.
We have to discuss cost.
Go ahead and move forward.
Cost to it. So. Okay. So I'm looking at the current.
For the record, Bonnie, would you introduce everybody you have with you, and that we have a number of people listening?
I have Chris Allmiller, the area operations service manager, as well as Tim Nash, the account manager, and myself. I'm Bonnie Snyder,
thank
business
you.
Manager for South Missouri and Kansas. Resident of Taney County.
Me too.
All right.
Go ahead, sir.
All right. So, I mean, just looking over everything on the current data invoice diagram there, you know, does that kind of look fit in the picture that you guys kind of have painted in your minds, too, as far as what we've got in place? You know, I'll just to kind of recap on everything right now, we have the courthouse that we are currently physically in here right now. We have data connections that go... Basically, we have data connectivity to the Hollister Airport, and we also have data connectivity to the Branson Underground. If we can kind of first direct some attention at the Hollister Airport, okay? The only thing we use that data connection for at the airport is to do the voice over IP connectivity from there to here so we can have local Branson calling. In my opinion, I think 10 meg is a little, the price for what we're paying for the 10 meg, and 10 meg is probably a little overkill for what, just to do the maximum of 23 voice calls across the PRI. Okay? I do know that before I was here, and I think when Commissioner Straffes came on board, that the plan was to turn the airport up and use it like we have now, or have it set up to use it more as a failover type strategy. I don't think anything ever really, other than, I think all the only thing it's really serving for us is the local calling part of the application, rather than disaster recovery. I mean, if the phone system goes down here in Forsyth, those 546 numbers that we have going into the phone system, it's not possible for those numbers to ring into the Branson Airport right now, right?
That's correct. It is set up as a survivable media gateway, which in the instance that the phone system may be down, there is still the capability, if the network is up, for those voice over IP phones to re-register back to Dayton County and have the ability to dial out.
Right.
Now, as you said, the Forsyth lines that are, as you see on the diagram, coming in here to the courthouse, if that phone system were down, those lines would not work. You would be able to dial out through the Branson line, but anything 546 wouldn't come in.
Right. So, I mean, realistically, the courthouse isn't reachable by its main telephone numbers that the public knows us by. 546-7200s, you know, all of those numbers at that point aren't really usable if the courthouse was to fall offline. Also, there are no extensions fed off of the phone system in at the airport at all right now either. I know the airport actually runs on its own small little key system over there, and they actually have analog lines going in there.
At the time of the original turn-up, there were extensions. So that
yeah, I know the plan has changed.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just, I'm just kind of throwing that out there of where we are right now.
Sure.
And so given that, and then so we've got that going over to the airport. We also have, you know, rack space at the Ozark Mountain Underground, and the way I understand our network is routing right now, all of our internet service actually comes in through the underground and then comes back through Metro Ethernet connection back to here, which is, and at this point we only have 3 meg of internet service feeding us right now at this point, which I know we are bumping the ceiling on that daily. I even checked it before I came up here, and just when we run these meetings, you could have 20 people or 20 public people streaming these meetings to them, and at that point we're maxing out our internet connection almost entirely. So that's where we're at right now. That's what we got. I'm definitely, like I said, up for suggestions. If you want to move on to the next sheet, I'd like to kind of simple things up a little bit. I don't think the commission and I have spent enough time yet to make sure how the three commissioners feel about the airport. You know, it was kind of by Commissioner Straffus's initiative, I think, to get that set up before. So I definitely wanted to get you guys' opinions officially on am I overlooking anything at the airport that, you know, why we might want to keep our stuff over there or use that location. I haven't gotten an official answer on that yet. But if there is no significant reason to possibly keep that phone system at the airport, I'm actually thinking it'd be better to relocate it to the underground and stick it in our cage space at the underground, move that PRI into the underground instead. We would be able to accomplish the same thing we're doing from the airport right now, but we would be able to shed the expense of the Ethernet expense to the airport. That's really not being utilized to its a good potential anyways. We do a lot of data replication. So just for like the recorder of deeds and all the other various departments here at the county, you know, we run a handful of network storage devices that we are replicating from NAS1 to NAS2 to NAS3. Of course, we've got the space at the underground, and there is no better place in town to actually put your data. So the underground is great, but the 10 meg connection that we have to the underground it's been easy for us to max that out when one of these network attached storage devices falls out of sync, and we basically denial of service ourselves once those NASs come back online. So that's where I put on there a minimum of 100 meg Ethernet connection from the courthouse to the underground. And then also, I'd really like to see us move into a minimum of 20 meg of DIA coming into the courthouse as well. I'm really kind of hoping that moving more so to the underground, if we chose to go that route, that the cost savings that we have by shedding the expense of the Metro Ethernet there at the airport can kind of help kind of balance the upgrades out on the other side.
And then what would be your reasoning for putting a PRI in the mountain?
So that the phone system that we have currently in Hollister can have take incoming and do outgoing calls.
For who, though? Because those are going to be Branson numbers.
Those are still your brand, the 332
numbers. So
you'd
still be at the same cut point. Well, right now, Forsyth being that 546 exchange?
I'm up for suggestions of correcting the cut point.
I just wondered what was your thought with that.
The original goal, you know, was twofold. One, some survivability, but also it was so that the citizens could dial a local number anytime and reach the county.
And I think
so if you're a citizen in Branson area, you can dial a 334 type number and be able to get to the county instead of having to dial long distance. I think that was the main driver.
Another thing I think was given the county's long distance charges, that they do a lot of calls into Branson, so I think it worked both directions.
That was it.
Yeah.
They were able to justify the cost of that based upon the long distance.
And that makes perfect
sense. I remember that. Yeah.
So if we were just to move that media gateway over to the mountain,
Mark,
we would be able to keep those same features alive.
Mm-hmm. Help me out. The numbers that we're talking about that currently would help citizens in the western side of the county call over here and it be a local call instead of considered a long distance call. How have we educated the public that those numbers even exist?
I know they are on the website.
Okay.
I do think that the primary, that's kind of like maybe a secondary benefit of having that service there, of the public having a local number to call us on. I think.
But my point is, if the public doesn't know about it,
right,
it's not going to get used. And I dare say that right now it's not being used other than the handful of people.
Well, it does get used, though, when the county, people within the county right now, if you were to call Branson from here, that's a toll-free call right now. So it has two benefits to the county.
The savings is the long distance.
Right. It's primary
here to the other side.
For us to call Branson, there were so many calls to Branson that the long distance, the toll, we're not charged the toll anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, I still.
That was a real savings. We actually did those numbers, and that's a correct statement.
You are gaining that savings today. What you may be missing out on is the PR benefit of the public knowing they have
right.
a local call.
Now, I do know it's on the website. I don't know, you know, how each department of the county basically publicizes their local Branson number.
What about your guys' phone book? Is it in there as 332-1900?
Unless you've purchased a listing like that.
Even the government pages?
I think it's all under showing the 546 numbers in the directories.
But, yes, that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And you could actually have directory assistance. If I were calling from Branson and asking for that number, communicate to your public. And that's probably the piece that hasn't been as widely expressed, and there'd be something to widen out.
Well, that surely can't be that expensive for us to add that so that the public would know that they could dial a local number from them.
I wouldn't push this too much. I think from the taxpayer level, the residents of Taney County, long distance charges on a residential level have pretty much been squashed down to nearly nothing. I mean,
everybody has cell phones.
Everybody has cell phones. There are no long-distance charges on cell phones anymore. Yeah. So even if they are paying per minute or paying for minutes on their cell phone, it's the same charge whether they're calling the 546 number or calling the 332 numbers. So,
but it is a community service, and I think you will find in this particular county there are many people that don't have toll-free cell phone plans. They're still on a basic service. So anything that we can use if we already have it in place,
mm-hmm.
publicize it, make it a community service It's just that next step.
The only thing I would bring up as a potential concern about the airport, and again, Mark made a good point, we don't know the future plans for the airport, but I remember when we put the system in over there, the existing phone system at the airport had a few years on it. I think they were partial to it, which is probably why they're back on it now. But there could be an additional cost for a secondary maintenance agreement. That system may or may not be manufactured discontinued, I don't know. But it would certainly be something to look into.
I went and visited with Mark Perrin over there about it, and it is truly, I think it's just one of these four-port analog maybe it runs on Centrex lines or something like that, where they might be using Centrex more for the extension dialing within it than anything now. I don't think they have more than four extensions fed off the whole thing total. And Mark was, he was just telling me that they just bought another smaller little system that was getting them by. I mean, the staff at the airport is pretty nominal as far as I understand it. So
are you responsible for the airport or not?
Not the phones that Mark is using, no. No. I'm involved with making sure we have data connectivity to the airport to run the Nortel, the piece of the CS-1000 that's over there. But other than that, Mark kind of in his own little world over there as far as what he's got going on.
So you can make decisions independent of them, and mm-hmm. then it's their responsibility.
That's the way he's been running it as it.
But he's going to come to us with the budget to run it, so
yeah.
We're connected.
Right.
Then I would make sure that at the airport we have equipment that really runs and can be serviced. Would be my questions to him.
Not saying that whatever they have can't.
Might be fine.
Great, but we just don't know.
Right.
I would just want to check that out a little bit. And if someone needs to be called, do we know who to call to service it? And just some of those things.
But so back to the redesign sheet here. I'm up for any kind of suggestions or any kind of new technologies you guys have available to help the situation here.
And if today isn't appropriate for that discussion, just tell me. But I think we would like to know more about this network application, what you're doing with the network, what kinds of things need to be stored, replicated. Is there equipment that you're putting into the mountain that's not currently there to take care of some of this?
Because we don't have enough bandwidth there, yeah. And we do have the Judicial Center, which is connected via dark fiber here. So we are replicating currently to the Judicial Center. Which would probably be I'd put that on the top five lists of fortified buildings within the county right now.
Yeah.
But once again, we're just talking about network attached storage devices and taking advantage of data replication software to make sure that here on this network, we're at a gigabit network, so we can access our data super fast off of the storage devices here. But at the same time, we want the peace of mind knowing that all of our data is offsite and available if we were to have to operate out of the underground or something like that.
Because with that being said, CenturyLink has also purchased Savvis, which is one of the nation's leaders in off-site location storage, co-location, as well as replication, current production software. And essentially what that enables you to do is not have to invest in the hardware and bandwidth per se on this one-to-one basis, but allows you to have those documents, files, production mode replication in a secure data center on CenturyLink hardware. So all of the cost associated with purchasing that, keeping it current, all of those things are part of that service contract. And it may be well worth us, because you're at this point yet where you've only spent this much money. And instead of investing in a lot of hardware and software that you're going to have to maintain, have staff to take care of, to see what your alternatives are in that marketplace if your applications fit that space, and kind of weigh the two up. Does making a capital expenditure for hardware, software, and having the staff on hand to maintain that offset a monthly recurring benefit and see where the county falls into that? That was not an option that was available when the underground came about. The underground is a phenomenal place to store servers, but then you have to own them. And CenturyLink can take that burden on with our newer product sets. So I think that might be a true cost consideration. This dollar figure, is that your lease cost for your space in the mountain?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think that number is a piece of what it takes to be at the mountain, so you have to factor in the Metro Ethernet costs as well.
I think, and you have to factor in what does that really take in the terms of hardware, software, and the staff that you have to maintain in order to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that as an entirety and really balance it out.
Is the option you just talked about, is that like a cloud?
Mm-hmm. Cloud computing. Mm-hmm. Savvis is the nation's leader, and about a year ago we purchased Savvis. CenturyLink is now the third largest telecommunications provider in the nation, as well as international. We can reach all over. But that has been the one component that we needed, not only that product set, but we needed to be able to provide our customers with the virtual hands.
Right.
Because the cost of ramping up, staffing up, keeping your folks current, is very difficult versus an entity that has all of those things in place.
I don't know if there's a legality issue with using a cloud storage or not for government. I mean, you would probably know. I guess there's not.
No.
Storage is storage.
Storage is storage. But I think you may be able to reduce the overall cost to the county when you really look at what that storage means versus having to do it independent. You know, a few years ago, that's all that was available,
right,
for the most part. But now that whole product space has grown to a different environment. So are there things that you've seen in the marketplace with mobility, those kinds of things that you feel like you want to incorporate into the county's plan?
I mean, we're moving more and more of our applications that we run internally to a web-based, you know, accessibility rather than a client-based. So, you know, mobility is great, but given the VPN access that we have into here, and as long as everything's in a web-based category where it's very efficient to be brought up from any kind of workstation from anywhere. I think we've been really going the right path to making things faster and more efficient from working remotely. You know, the mobility, the Sheriff's Department has brought a whole new level of mobility, having the MDT workstations in their deputy cars. You know, I think that can, the thing is though, is all those databases. That is actually one thing I don't know if we'll ever be able to put up into the cloud, is their Cody application that they run. Cody runs a pretty strict list of requirements, and they want to manage that server. The server needs to be up to these specs. We've been reminded of those requirements on a handful of occasions when we tried to do things a little differently and had to take a little step backwards to keep Cody happy with us, so that would all need to be kind of checked. But I would think, you know, like the Cody application and the recorder's office are probably the two big mobily accessible departments right now that are just, I mean, there's people using those right now as we speak, I'm positive. So, but I mean, at this point, we have everything in here now, and at the main big bottleneck is only having a 3 megabit internet connection. That's where my pain is.
When I was headed down that path of mobility, I was thinking of folks like the commissioners, people that are out in the field. There's a certain amount of your job that happens right here. Then there's a certain amount of your job that happens when you're literally out in the county and interacting with the public. And having the ability to take their smartphone and give them true mobility presence where they can instant message back and forth, instant message to other departments?
We refer to the current commission as Brandon and the geriatrics. I can't imagine.
That's on the record.
I know, that's fine. I can't imagine the instant messaging between... I'm just teasing. And that might be something, you know, you'd show us. I don't know that that would be a benefit now, but it might be something, hey, this is where you can do, because right now I just pick up the phone, call Nikki, and hey, this is what we're looking into.
There's
figured out. But.
There is some complication with that I'm not saying we can't overcome, but just even running an internal mail server here, okay? Everything's available via Sunshine Request, okay? So if we move to an instant messaging platform, and you try a conversion, I don't even know where the complication is between you guys talking to each other across an instant message platform.
Well, that's why I said call Nikki. I don't call
if you do it with Nikki, it's documented. It is a little bit of a probably a couple decades back, but it does keep their level of complication down to a minimum as far as documentation and the exposure that they have.
But I think the county as a whole, I would be looking at, even beyond the spectrum of these three folks, you have many different departments. that interact with their department and interact with the public differently.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we overall take what we already have as a foundation and take that into the next world of communications? I would look at these things. I would be looking at mobility. I would be looking at the video conferencing apps. If I wanted to watch this conference today over my internet connection and see the commissioners, that would be a real benefit to me as a resident of the county. Those kinds of things.
Right.
What would it really take? Look at it. See what you could do, how you could serve your county, how some other counties are incorporating these technologies. What's really the associated cost benefit of those things? What is your community? Who's really moving into Taney County? And are we really servicing that group effectively? Do we have the online services that the community is looking for? When people move here, they're moving from typically larger venues. And they're coming to Taney County, and they're thinking, well, how come I can't get this online? How come I can't do that? So are there areas of the county where effectively we can set things up? And Ron made a real good point a minute ago that local number hasn't really been publicized to the public community. Are there other things that we can improve efficiencies within the county structure itself that you have staff physically performing, either answering those calls or faxing those documents, that could be taking place as an online transaction? And it would solve the residents' need immediately and allow your staff to become more effective. I'm sure you're just like any other organization. As people leave due to attrition and moving off, you don't really replace them anymore. You just kind of spread those duties out among a few more people. But can we use some of the technology to take up that gap? Those would be some of the things that I would be looking at. The other piece that I guess I would like to see, and I'm sure you gentlemen also, is that network piece.
Network piece.
The routers and the switches, the service contracts involved in those things, so that as this technology plan comes together and everyone is bidding on this to really have that firmed up on any type of service contracts, whether they were SmartNet or whatever they would be, to make that a complete package. Because I think sometimes you get bits and pieces of these things, then they don't all balance in the end. And you have to know the entire whole. There's the piece that our transport. You sign the maintenance agreement for hardware. Some of that hardware needs software upgrades. And then behind that are the data layer. And I don't really see that quite represented. I think that would be an important part of the equation to have out there. So that as you're writing a telecommunications check and you're seeing everything in that budget to be mapped out.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I have a suggestion that with Dan and Brandon's approval, I would like Brandon and the geriatrics to be the point person that works with you all and works with Mark and move us in the direction. Obviously, Mark is the one that we're looking to right now for recommendations and thoughts on how to proceed. Do you guys have some questions over what we have just covered and the comments that Bonnie's made and what Mark has said?
My understanding is currently we're not under any sort of maintenance agreement, is that right?
You are under a maintenance agreement on the phone systems, the Avaya PBXs, as well as the 911 equipment. What has expired are the contracts on the Metro Ethernet, the voice circuits that come in. One is called a T1, the other one's called a PRI, okay. The long distance, and we've allowed those to continue on a month-to-month basis at what had been contracted rate. In our industry, if a customer purchases services month to month, that rate is going to be a premium. They agree to a term agreement, then the rate is reduced because they have obligated themselves for a period of time. We've allowed these contracts to go on for the contracted rate on a month to month basis. There was changeover happening at the county. things that Mark wanted to explore. In order to put things out to bid, an RFP would have to be written. Some of the configuration would probably be changed
mm-hmm.
based upon a new outlook.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Prefer to only put it out for bid once.
Mm-hmm. How long do we allow that to go on, I think, is something that is a normal question. When we are asking for a contract, it's typically also, and early on, these were all build-outs, so there was a cost to recovery. Most counties and city governments typically only enter into a one-year agreement, a one-year term, with auto renewals available to them at that contracted rate, because you have tax revenue based on annual funding. So you can't really enter into a five-year agreement. There's a municipality clause that goes into effect, and we can accommodate that. But I think it would be important to get things mapped out and understand every component of that 2013 budget, what's going to be static, what is subject to be moved, and have that plan, that ultimate plan, if this is the new plan, working towards that goal. There are some technologies that you want to explore with CenturyLink. There may be technologies that you're wanting to see from other vendors. Take a tour of their mind and then decide what you really need for 2013. Have a five-year plan out there, because we can't always do everything we want to do up front. It's just like at home. We've got to plan those things out and start building that foundation for the future. And we'd certainly be more than welcome to invoke our resources, the vendors that we work with, and I'm sure anybody else that you talk to would do the same, and then publish an RFP based on what services you want and the qualifications of the vendor. That would be my recommendation.
Additional comments, Mark?
I'm good.
With the commission's approval, we will designate Brandon to be the point person, liaison, by and between the county commission and this effort. Is that all right?
It's fine.
Since you understand the language that's being spoken to.
It's still a little over my head, but that's all right.
Well, the point of it, though, in the end, is you shouldn't have to learn Data 101. We can break that down simplistically.
Right.
But it starts out with what are the goals of the county. And
Brandon's going to take the time to spend some time with you. And take some time to spend some time with you, and we're going to move forward on what proposals that we think are in the best interest.
And the question was, how quick, and I say immediately, that we get this covered. I appreciate the fact that CenturyTel has kept it on a cost basis instead of the higher level of expense on the...
Well, we are paying the higher level of expense.
No, you're not.
We stayed at the same range.
You know, based upon our last conversation, I thought that we were going to be engaged in the RFP process pretty quickly, and several months has passed, and I haven't seen that. I have to account for these numbers is really what the bottom line of it is. So if I can go back in good faith and say a committee has been formed to review the technology in Taney County and we're moving forward in good faith, then I can keep this out here. And I think a 90-day period is reasonable. Is that reasonable for you
mm-hmm.
to come together with that plan and start rolling forward?
We appreciate that, and we do not want to drag our feet any longer. We want to move forward on this, so
okay.
We will do that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you all for your patience. I appreciate it. We wish you well.
Thank you.
We'll limper out of here.
Limper out.
They say it's driving Miss Daisy.
Mr. Ashley, did you have something else for us that you have returned? I'm curious. Of course you did. What spot would that be? Mark, could you, after you're finished, could I...
Thanks, sir.
appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
I would like to stand in recess until we come back for our 1 o'clock executive session meeting.